There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rippin'.
Crafty Golf, Mr. Justin Kraft in the Member Guest studio today in person, your first in-person podcast, correct?
First in-person podcast. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome, man. I think we actually, well, I know Benoit introduced us, but technically we met because you won the Ripstick giveaway, right?
Yeah, where is that?
It's right there. You see the little plastic?
Don't let me leave without that.
I won't, because I shipped out one the other day. The other gal was local, so I dropped hers off. And now I got you in studio. And that was actually the most wild coincidence
ever. I think I messaged you at the same time or a few seconds after you tagged me in that post, because I had no idea until you replied to my message that I won a Ripstick.
Yeah, it's actually kind of wild. Like, it was one of those, it's almost like you had the telepathy thing with somebody.
This must have been just meant to be.
Yeah, I guess. So now we're here and we're going to talk a little bit about, so you're out at Spring Hill. Maybe give the people a little bit background about yourself. And then I got some questions. And like always, we were chatting a little bit before and we just started deep diving into the golf swing.
Yeah, it didn't take long, right?
Yeah, no, and it never does. So why don't you give the people a background about yourself, and then we'll just dive into the golf swing. And our listeners love to know like how to get better and learn from teachers. And obviously you're doing a good job out at Spring Hill. So
yeah. Thanks. I'll give my quick background, right? I grew up, didn't play golf till I was like in eighth grade. My dad told me I would not be allowed to go out for high school golf because he was an all-state track runner. And so if I wanted to go out for high school golf, I had to find my own ride, my own clubs, the whole thing, right?
He wanted you to run track?
He wanted me to run track.
Okay.
Playing golf was stupid.
And you never did run track?
I never ran track.
I ran track.
Did you?
Just 2 years.
I'm not saying it's bad, but no. I liked golf a lot more and it took up too much time.
So. See, I wish I would have gone the golf route,
right?
I wonder where my game would be nowadays if I didn't start after
college. So I picked it up pretty quick. I was always curious, like, why? Why does the ball go right when I felt like I made the same swing, or why does it go lower, whatever? And then eventually got a scholarship offer from Northwestern College in Orange City, Iowa. Shout out, okay. Red Raiders. Great college if you're a young kid looking for a kind of a Christian Reformed school that has an awesome golf
program. What division are they?
NAIA. Two?
NAIA.
Yep. So I won the conference my freshman year. I was an All-American sophomore year. And then I won the conference player of the year again senior year. So I had a good little run. But
It is a nice little run.
Yeah, I knew professional
golf.
So
you can play. Yeah, but you can still play golf.
I can play some golf. Yeah. I can play some golf. I haven't practiced like in 8 months, but other than that.
What was your, I think you kind of alluded to this earlier, what was your low handicap index at? Do you keep an index in college?
No, we don't keep it in college, but I did go back at one point. I was messing around a few years ago and I put my tournament scores in, my practice round scores in, and it got to close to a +3.
Okay.
So, and that's hard to put into, like, sometimes tournament conditions are tough, right? So
yeah. It's harder than just going out and playing,
and selecting blue tees and 69 or whatever you shot. And then whatever. So my best competitive round ever, was in Spencer, Iowa.
Okay.
The Northwest Am. I don't know if you've ever heard of that tournament.
No,
it's
haven't.
The biggest amateur event, I think, in the United States. There's 350 plus players. Anyway, ton of Division I talent there. In my sophomore year, when I won All American, I shot 64 in the third round. That's 8 under,
and it's 8 under in competition.
In competition, yeah. And that's the day. So Thursday, Friday, they leave the tees kind of up, maybe 65-ish, 100, 6700. And then Saturday, Sunday, if you make the final flight, they move the tees all the way back to 7+. And so a lot of the scores are decent the first few days, and then the final 2 days, they get a little worse.
Sure.
So my 64 was a good round.
Yeah, that was a good round. Good round.
And I went from 9 back to 2 up going into the final round, and then I won.
So you played in college, so it's a little bit different. But one of the things that I've struggled with is going low in terms of, like, how do you get to that level where you can go 8 under? Because I know, like, it's even a scratch or a, you know, +1, +2, kind of the range that I'm in. How did you get over that hump of going from like 2-3 under to 6-7 under? Because like Bryson talked about, like moving to the up tees and getting comfortable being that number. And I find, and I think a lot of amateurs find this, their best rounds are when they like double one, right? Yes. Like you double bogey one and now you don't care about your round because in your mind, it's like, whatever, I'm not shooting a good score today. And you go out and you play free and you don't care. And all of a sudden you pile up four birdies and you come in birdie, birdie, birdie the last three and you're two under. But like, how do you get comfortable at it being low, staying low and piling on?
So two parts to that answer. First, the day that I shot that round, I was begging my dad to like, can we not go? Like I'm nine back. I don't want to go. My swing feels terrible. And we got to the range. I duck hooked every single ball. I was so deflated heading to first tee.
I love those days.
And then I remembered one key. As I was walking to the first tee, I remembered a key and I just blasted it 40 yards right off the tee. And I looked at him and I was like, we got this. And so I think my expectations were super low because the range session was so bad.
Sure.
So regardless, I found it, obviously. But to go back to your point, getting comfortable shooting a low score is so difficult.
Yeah.
It's like at the point where you get maybe 3, 4, 5 under, you're just so like uncomfortable. I've never been here, right? I just want the round to be over and I can post this 4 or 5 under.
Get me to that last shot on 18.
Correct, exactly. So my freshman here, I shot so many even par rounds that my coach and my swing coach were both like, dude, you should be shooting in the 60s like consistently. Just trust me, as soon as you do it one time, you're going to do it a bunch of times. And so it's so funny because my last 6 months of my freshman year, everyone was like, you're going to get over the hump. You're going to get over the hump. And I never did. And so the first tournament in the summer after my freshman year, I had to par 18 to shoot one under. And as soon as I did that, it's like the roof blew off.
Really?
Like I just started shooting under par all the time. It didn't mean so much to me anymore because I'd already done it.
Yeah.
And so I think, like you said, I've certainly done my rounds playing the forward tees, playing from 5,800 yards, right? And getting used to being 6 under through 10 or 7 under through 14 or whatever. But there was a moment, I want to say sophomore year, I was so glad I went through that because it was in our first conference tournament round and I believe I had a putt to be 7 under through 15 and I missed it and I ended up shooting 5 or 4 under. But like,
yeah, the bogeys just came in after that.
They came in after that, yeah. But then I look back and I'm like, wow, I still shot 4 under and I'm a little pissed that I finished the way I did, right? So you just eventually... you get used to it, but you do have to play the forward tees. You have to get super comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah. And that's where I have to get with I feel like a lot of my game right now is just, it's almost mental at this point. And especially like applying a lot of the work and the skill work and technical work actually out onto the course and then seeing it on a scorecard.
And that's where I think the internal and external goals are super, like if your external goal is to shoot at 65 this year, well, that's great. But I think maybe an internal goal would be when I'm playing well, I want to stick to exactly what I'm doing without thinking about the outcome.
Yeah.
Right?
Trust the process. Yeah. We talk a lot. I think we recorded, I don't think it's gone out yet, but it was like, it was talking about process versus outcome.
Yeah.
100%. And how so many pros like Scotty Scheffler talks about it all the time. He's like, the outcome is going to be the outcome. Like I can hit a really good shot, get a bad bounce. I can hit a really good putt. It's not going to go in that day for whatever reason. You just have to kind of be comfortable with that. And the more you are, and I think that's just what is hard for me and probably other amateurs, is like getting over that reality when you feel like you're doing things, you know, you think you're doing it perfect, but golf's an imperfect game. And that's also what makes us
right. I think that's like sports in general, right? Like I think for any athlete that sets those external goals, like Anthony Edwards might say, I want to win the NBA finals this year. Well, some of that is actually out of his control, even though he's amazing, right? Like he's having an amazing year. But there is something to be said about, hey, I don't have complete control over how the other 9 players on the floor are going to play on any day. So I think it's the same thing in golf. Like I think Justin Thomas posts his goals every year and he didn't have the best 2023. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No, he didn't. I do see, like, I think once a year he posts that little notepad of his
exactly.
goals.
He puts a little note and it's like, I love his goals. Like he wanted to win a major or whatever in the world rankings or whatever. And obviously he didn't have a great year, but I wonder if he would have set more like internal goals. Like I want to make sure I do my 90 minutes of cardio before, you know, whatever it is, my 30 minutes of putting practice every morning, whatever it is, those goals are a little bit more controllable. And I think that can help a player feel like they at least accomplished those
goals. You can accomplish the process a lot easier than you can the outcome, right?
Correct.
Like you could be like a Xander and he goes, I don't even know what he shot on Sunday at the Players, but I would imagine at least a couple under, but like Scotty just went out and shot 8 under.
Exactly.
Right?
How do you control that, right?
Yeah, you can't really control, you know, a Tom Kim going out that one tournament he had maybe last year, 2 years ago, where he fires like 14 under, you know, and it's like, what am I supposed to do? You know, right. I mean, that's just, those anomalies happen, and that's what makes golf golf. So one of the other things we wanted to talk about too is just, I mean, clearly you loved the game so much if you kind of went anti-dad and went and played golf and did all those things, but we talk about just the love of the game in general and here a lot, because outside of the, you know, the processes, the outcome, the practice, all those things, it's the actual sport and the love of the game that, you know, we all love it so much. And if you're teaching it and you're doing it every single day, sometimes I think about, you know, what I want to do in my future. And like, how did you decide to go from playing the game you love to like being in it, right? Like working in it. Cause that's different, right? A lot of people will say, if you love golf, don't work in golf.
Right.
But then the other side of it is like, if you love golf, like truly be in it, do what you love and help other people or whatever you want to do. So like talk a little bit through that.
Yeah. So I was just absolutely obsessed with it. Like it's probably all I still think about to a fault. But yeah, so actually I didn't start in golf. When I graduated college, I was engaged and I needed to make money to pay for a wedding. So I actually got a job as a banker for 6 months, maybe. And I just told my wife, I'm like, hey, I can't do this. I have to be at a golf course. Otherwise, I'm not going to be happy in life. So I actually started teaching at Golf Tech, which was in Eden Prairie, right? Really good place.
Yep.
Taught there for 2 years. Obviously, I was at Medina. Now I'm at Spring Hill. But I would just say, man, my passion for like why stuff worked was just amazing. Like it absolutely infatuated me, because when I would see someone say, oh, you have to grip it like this. And then I would watch TV on Sundays. I'd watch the Players, right? And I'd be like, well, Xander grips it like this. And then Scotty does this. And Scotty's feet are going crazy. Why aren't we teaching people to use Scotty's footwork? And I just was like, I just don't think so. And so I just got this really inquisitive, questioning, like always hungry to learn kind of attitude about it. And I don't think I'll ever know everything, like, but
it's impossible to,
exactly.
And everybody teaches and learns differently. And I've gone through that evolution of my game. And like, when I really took that first turn of saying, like, if I want to get better at this sport, I need to take a lesson.
100%.
So I was very self-taught for a while. And like when I had gone to see Benoit, or even like my first lesson was actually at Golf Tech. I went and I did one of those like
swing evaluations.
And then they give you like pulled into the 10 pack, because I was like seeing some like, yeah, this is great. And it was kind of like, you know, we'll do wedges, we'll do short game, we'll do putting, do all this stuff. And then, you know, after Golf Tech, I went and joined Windsong, started seeing Elfner, and I found that Luke Benoit guy on Instagram and started seeing him a little bit. And when I started to realize, like, I know nothing about the golf swing, I didn't realize how much I didn't know. And I think when we talk on this podcast, and Andy, who unfortunately isn't here today, but he is so deep into the golf swing, he knows so much about it, right? Yeah. I was like, man, I got a long ways to go. And so as it starts to make sense a little bit more and you start to realize all the different intricacies of it, and then the way that, like, you know, my body and your body move, right? Depending on mobility, height, length of your arms, like whatever it might be, I started to, in my mind, think, man, I could probably get my buddies 4 or 5 strokes less if I just change their loft lies and maybe like their takeaway.
Yeah. Right.
And I don't even know that much.
Nope, I know.
Right. And so it really is interesting. And I want your perspective on like when people come and see you, I think a lot of different coaches approach things a lot of different ways. I would like to hear, like, if you had a newbie walk in, and not a newbie to golfer, like someone new to you.
Just a new student.
A new student. How do you, whether it's online or in person, start to identify how you can help that specific person?
I think it comes down to, first, you got to build some rapport and some trust. And so what I like to do is I always ask them if they've seen their swing in person. I'll be like, hey, have you ever seen a video of your swing? And a lot of people say this all the time, get a bad rap for it, but like, we always say feel isn't real. And so, but the camera doesn't lie. So you may think the camera adds 10 pounds, but it's not going to make you come over the top. Right. So like the camera might add, you know, people say, oh, don't look at the photo. Right. You look whatever, like you added 10 pounds.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't open your club face. It doesn't ruin your takeaway, and it doesn't make you come over the top. So the camera, like, it doesn't lie. So I always make people understand, like, hey, what we see on this video, this is what's happening.
It's reality.
On good shots and bad shots. Like, even though you might hit, we might see this pattern. Like, there's a 30 handicap in Florida that's going to get a hole in one today, and he might not have a very good swing, right? But he is going to find the middle of the face and square the face to the path once and maybe hit a good shot, right?
If he's playing every day, he's probably going to have more hole in ones than you.
Exactly.
I still have zero. I have two holes in three, though. Yeah.
Holes in what?
Holes in three. Water, dunk.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, it's not.
I didn't get that.
It's actually the that's worst terrible. Feeling in the world.
You have three of those?
Two.
Oh, you have
two holes in three.
So you hit it in the water and then you dunked it.
Yeah. Actually neither were in the water. I don't know why.
I was thinking hole in three, like you made a birdie on.
Yeah. So one was, it was in a practice round prepping for like our playoff tournament the next day. And we were on hole nine, hit a wedge. My buddy's like, it's a nine iron. I'm like, no, it's a wedge. He's like, it's a nine iron. So I hit a wedge. And he goes, hit your nine iron, boom, dunked it. And then this is the really controversial one. Do you know Willinger's very well? It's down by,
I've heard of that.
Like, is it Carleton College?
Yeah.
So they have really weird colored tee boxes. And when I say weird, I'm talking like purple, green, yellow. That's and different. We get up to hole like four, and we all, two of us tee off. I'm the second one to tee off, hit it on the green, and they're like, hey, you guys we're on the wrong tee box. Like it's purple. We're supposed to play green or whatever. Like, oh shit. So then we had to drive down to the other tee box.
Oh, geez.
And I dunk it. And two of the guys are like, dude, you just got a fucking hole in one. And me and my buddy who like play golf, I'm like, I know, but I can't count that. Like,
no, you can't.
I can't do it because technically like the score that I wrote, like I have to write a three because I already teed off. It's just not a true hole in one. That was a gut wrenching one.
Terrible.
That was a really gut wrenching one. So anybody out there, if you ever hit a ball like in the water or whatever, you want to hit another one, just don't do it because the risk is not worth
the drop zone.
Yeah, the risk is not. Just try and make a four. Don't try and make a three. Oh,
that's horrible. Okay, so the question. Really, let's go back to the question. You said,
new student. Okay, yeah, how do you approach a new student that walks in? Because we were talking a little bit about how like teaching methods are a little bit different, and how everybody learns is different, and the way that I learned versus somebody else, and you have to pick that apart with every single different student that you have.
Yep.
Right. And so you're talking about people's golf swing, seeing it on camera. This is reality.
Yep.
You know, how do you go from there?
So I always try to like, I try to pick at their brain and try and say, hey, like, what's the pain point? Why are you here? Because if we're going to work on something and it doesn't influence impact, it's not worth our time. So if there's something that you're coaching, you are working on, and you can't tell me why it helps, then I think it's a waste of time.
As the player?
The player.
The player correct. Can't tell
if
you
the player
why
can't
helps.
Tell me, hey, I'm working on external rotation of the trail shoulder because of this. If they can do that, great. But if they can't tell me what it does to face contact, ground contact, face path, like then I don't know if it's worth it.
So as an example, I always try and like, you know, some of our audience is very, very into the golf swing and some are like trying to learn it. So would a good example be, hey, I'm working on my takeaway and you go wide and say, well, if I take it away wider, it helps me come more from the inside to get that, you know, push draw instead of somebody saying I'm working on the wider takeaway because I saw on Instagram.
Better.
Yeah, right. Whatever.
Exactly. Right. And I'm not saying like, even if you don't know the answer to that question, it doesn't mean it's not influencing impact somehow, but I do need you to know the why. Because then you can almost become your own coach. And so I love people that come see me, but I also love giving them the power to understand this is what we're looking for when we look at it on video. And here's why. And then foreshadow what's going to happen when they make that change. If you have someone that's used to coming 10 degrees over the top and the face is open to the path and they're hitting pulse slices, and all of a sudden you tell them that, hey, we're going to start swinging more from the inside, I would expect the face to still be open. We're going to hit push slices now. But we need to get this pattern down and then shut the face for you to now hit the push draw, right? And so I'm not saying that's how I would do it. I typically shut the face player.
Yeah.
But I do want them to understand, how do I know if I'm doing these changes right and I'm not videoing myself? First of all, you should just be videoing yourself, right?
Yeah. I got that little thing over there that just stays in that exact same spot.
And you just video all the time.
Just video all the time.
Because what you think you're doing and what you're actually doing, everyone knows like it's not the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I will always try and say, hey, look, Here's what we're doing, and here's what we're going to try and do to fix it. Now, in the meantime, this is probably what you're going to see. And if you see that, it's not a bad thing. It just means you're on the right track, but we're missing one ingredient.
I had that exact same convo with Benoit once. Yeah. He was like, you are going to hit duck hooks for a week. And he goes, you can't care about it. And that, you know, he's big about the foam ball and all that stuff to not see the outcomes. But I don't like hitting foam balls. And I told him that. I'm like, I don't like hitting. I'd rather see a duck kick and know it's wrong than hit a foam ball and have no fucking clue what's going on. So that's just me.
Yeah, that just goes back. I've learned a lot from Luke. He's the man. The type of feedback a golfer gets is so crucial. So like too many golfers that walk in to take a lesson with me, they assume where the golf ball goes tells them whether they did it right or not.
Sure. Yeah.
And I know a lot of crappy golf swings that, like I said, 30 handicap in Florida, getting a hole in one today. It's still a bad swing. He still needs to go practice his swing. But if we allow the golf ball to tell us if we did good or bad, like in the initial stages of learning, we're screwed.
Yeah, it's fair.
So that's why I think Luke has the players, and I like to have players hit foam balls, just so what I like to do is like only give them video. And so they don't get to see where the foam ball even goes. It hits the screen and they don't get to see it. So we would have GC Hawk off or TrackMan off, and we would just
watch the video. Not even looking at the outcome.
Exactly. And say, hey, look at the takeaway. There was less forearm rotation. The face stayed more shut. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I would think like that this was my swing for, call it, 2 years. I made a over-the-top, flippy, pull cut, get to a plus one.
Oh, wow. It takes a lot of skill.
The first, I'll never forget it. The first time I ever met Luke, I was like, give me your worst. I want to know what's going on. And he was like, you have a plus seven face control, but you are a, like, your path is a actual seven.
Yeah.
And you just make the matchup work.
Wow.
And if you want to like get better, this is what you have to do.
That's impressive.
And I was like, I have never heard. He's like, I can't even believe that you're able to square the face from there. He's just like, you've just hit so many balls.
Wow.
You know how to make it work.
So I can picture your swing now at this point. I've never seen it, but I would assume first time you saw him, the path was 8, 9, 10 left, and the face must have been fairly open, and you had a ton of hand action to square it with almost no shaft length.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, so I dig into the numbers a lot with Elfner, who I see very frequently because he's out of Windsong, awesome coach as well. And I think when we were first getting together, my path was like minus six.
That's
six or five. I was making that cut work. Wow. And one. Now I'm trying to get into like everything between negative one and plus one. Like that's my goal, is to keep it within zero. That.
Luke loves to zero it.
Yeah. I'm all for 0-0-2, but I just know, like, now that I understand kind of path and all that, I'm like, if I can live in a world where 80% of my shots fall within negative one to plus one, like I'm going to be able to control the dispersion better. And I know I'm going to miss it two ways. I just want the misses to be small each way. So, but yeah, I mean, like when I was with it was like minus five and I was trying to make that work.
That's crazy. That's crazy from a face control standpoint. But then like you talk about the player that's in front of you. Some people, like, I hate to say this, but some people don't practice and they need an answer now.
Sure.
And so I get a lot of those. I get a lot of those, to be honest, at Spring Hill, because those guys don't have time to practice all the time. And so they need an answer right now. And sometimes
they need something to go apply on the course.
Yeah, exactly.
That day.
They're playing that afternoon and they need something to play with today. And so in that situation, hitting foam balls does nothing, right? Like they need an answer for hitting their seven iron. Let's just say the contact is way too heel biased. And every third ball they shank, even the good ones are still on the heel a little bit, right? But the entire pattern is too far towards the heel. I've got to find a way to get that thing towards the toe. And it doesn't matter what the video looks like. And it doesn't matter if we're going to go change the takeaway. We've got to find the right answer right away to move the contact more towards the toe.
So, and we get a lot of questions about this. This is like probably the most frequently asked question when we have either fitters or swing coaches or just folks on in general, which is, I can't practice all the time. When I go to play, like that's my practice, right? I have 30 minutes before I play because I don't either, I'm not a member of a club, or like when I go, the range is like, I'm going to go play golf too. I don't just have an hour to practice. When you focus on that, what are the main things, right? Like someone comes to you and they're trying to get a touch up before the weekend or whatever. Like, what can people actually focus on that will give them results? Because I have this conversation with friends all the time. Like, look, dude, you just have to have a real conversation with yourself. If you can't practice, then you need to change the way that you're going to.
You need to change your expectations.
You need to change your expectations, one. And then you need to change the way that before you go and play, you can't just go hit 20 balls and expect to like, oh yeah, I got a good feel for it. Like
I talk a lot of like there's two different almost lessons. Like, so there's almost two trains of thought. You could have one player where you're like, hey, this player is in it for the long haul, like Jordan, and he's going to go work on his pattern. He's going to do drills. He's not going to care if he hits immediately like great shots, right? And then you have another pattern where it's like, hey, I'm going to play this afternoon. I don't practice. I need this to be better today. I almost liken that to like, imagine the first house you ever lived in or the first house you ever bought. If you were to go through your entire life and say, hey, what I'm going to do is just constantly like make renovations to this house. It's always going to be the same house, but you can make it slightly better every time, right? Or what you could do is you could bulldoze that house and you could build your dream house, pool, basketball court, whatever you want, right?
Golf simulator,
right? It'd be sweet. On the lake. But what you'll essentially have for those two different golfers, the golfer that's ready to tear it down, like they can build their dream house, right? But the golfer that needs an answer today, they're kind of always doing renovations, right, to the same house that they've always lived in. So that's kind of the analogy I use. But to be honest with you, what I'm looking for in those lessons, right? Luke told me that he's like, contact is dopamine. Like, get them to hit the center of the face.
Sure.
And they're going to love the game. Might be a little right, might be a little left. But for the golfers we're serving in that scenario, they just want to hit it solid. So how do I get low point in front of the ball and contact within 5, 10 millimeters of the center? That's really it. And so to do that, honestly, I do a ton of skill development drills for a player that like needs an answer now and they're not super technical. Let's say they're over fading the ball. Look, let's try to draw. Show me some draws. Like let's hit some pull. Let's hit some big push draws. Let's like neutralize the pattern. Right. So I think Wyndham Clark said this recently. He was like, yeah, what I do, if it starts getting a little too cutty, I just start drawing it more. I draw it for a few days. Then if it gets starts getting too hooky, I just cut it for a few days. And he's like always trying to find the middle.
Sure.
So with the players that need an answer now, let's say they come in and it's a big slice, right? I typically don't like to let people leave hitting a big slice, right? If you come see me and you're slicing it, we're going to fix that. But if they need to go play that afternoon, it might be, hey, we're going to strengthen the club face as much as we can. I want you swinging out to right field. That's all we're doing today. And I want you to apply that however you want. And there might not even be video in that lesson because they're going out to play and they don't need to see all the
how bad it is.
Gross leg work and elbows and everything, right?
Yeah, that's... The hardest part for me when I get into the season is not trying to practice when I play.
Oh, so hard.
Unless it's specifically for practice.
Yeah.
And I've probably said this 10 times on the podcast, and I will say it again because not everybody listens to every podcast, but Ben Siegel, amazing player. He's out at Winsong, graduated from Kansas, had his first PGA start in Mexico a couple weeks ago. I always am picking his brain because... Yeah. You know, he's an elite player. And he says, you know, when I'm practicing before, like during the day, he's a pro. So like he's out there for 8 hours, right? And his practices are different. Like he practices, he plays, he practices gym. He's like, when I practice and I go out to the course, when I go to the course, I just swing. Like I'm just whatever I got that day, I'm just playing. I got to be comfortable with it because every time you go out and play, you might have a backache, or you might like not all mentally be there for that day. Like you have to work through whatever you've got for that day.
Yep.
And you can't just expect that you can go like work on your,
Getting
through like whatever when you're playing. You just got to go play and like the practice will eventually translate. Really difficult.
I don't know if it was a basketball coach or a golf coach that I heard. I have a big basketball background. I love basketball.
Well, yeah, you're what, 6'3"?
Yeah, 6'3". Yeah, 6'3".
Yeah, 6'3". Humble brag. Yeah, I'm 6'3".
No, I'm trying not to. I see the, yeah.
What do you see?
No, go ahead. I was going to say, I see the Packers thing there, and I'm like, okay, so we're football fans.
Yeah, I mean, I like everything. Honestly, I'm if we dive into my personal life, I'm a Packer fan. Everything else is Minnesota, so I'm
really?
big on
Timberwolves?
It. Huge.
All right, let's go.
I've gone through a lot of years of bad. Well, I used to be a season ticket holder.
Could Anthony Edwards hit it 350 if he had 1 month to train?
Yes.
Absolutely, he could.
Oh,
I
do
that on my story.
Have you ever seen that interview with him and Marnie Gellner where she's like, listen, not the sports? And he's like, she's like, could you play broomball? He's like, yeah.
Like, he's like,
golf? And he goes, I'm about it. Like, she's just risking it all. He's like,
that's
yeah,
so
I could do whatever you need me
exactly.
to do.
Just a freak athlete.
And I'd be an
right?
elite at it. Yeah.
Basketball players are aliens, man. You go to those games, those guys are bigger than NFL players, taller, more skilled. I mean, not more skilled, but like, the fact that they can dribble that little ball and shoot it from anywhere. And like, I think those players are absolute aliens. Like, it's unbelievably awesome.
Really cool story to tell. I don't know if it's, I don't think I'll get in trouble. This was time in Minnesota. It was D'Angelo Russell. And it was the first round of the playoffs. So probably what, April, May timeframe. Club was just opening up.
Yep.
In a playoff game that night, and they were playing, who was it? Memphis. And saw him out of the clubhouse playing golf to warm up.
No kidding.
Yeah, just playing golf. Dude, love, like, crazy about golf. A lot of basketball players are crazy about golf. Yeah, you see MJ, like, they love it. And I mean, you think about all of the ways that your body moves and kind of the mobility and the different things you got to do in golf to be a good player. I mean, probably translates decently well. And Benoit had talked about, like,
specializing.
Kids, right? Yeah, like, there's a difference between specializing, but like playing other sports that still work on the things that you like in the sport that you specialize in. Correct. So kind of cool.
But anyway, where I was going with that was you mentioned like when you go play. And I can't remember if it was a basketball coach or a golf coach, but he said, when you play, you better be playing to play great. Like, do not go out there and start to say, oh, I'm going to work on this like 3-quarter cut shot that this guy taught me and go be okay with shooting 7 over par when you're a plus one. Right. So if you're going to go play, go apply exactly what you have that day and go try and scratch as much out of it as you can.
Yeah.
Grind over and get used to that, because when it's time to play well and the chips are down in the member guest or whatever your big event is, like, that's how it's going to feel.
Yeah. I always look at like those, the PGA Tour, you know, whoever wins for the weekend, if you look at their 4 rounds, usually one of them was a really, really grindy,
gritty.
1 under, 2 under.
Yeah.
Right.
Hit it bad,
but kept themselves in it.
Yep. Mentally just grind. Short, yeah. Strokes gained around the greens, probably decent.
They kept themselves in it and gave themselves a chance to go shoot that 8 under round under par that ended up winning them the tournament. But nobody talks about that round that, nope. Like, I mean, I remember seeing Wyndham stat, like, he's always hanging around at the players. Then they were like, he's made 18 of 20 putts inside at 20 feet or something. I'm like, talk about just grinding out pars.
I wonder how many of those were inside 3 feet, but that's still a stupid stat.
Yeah. Well, obviously some were, but I think I do remember seeing like he was making a lot of like 8-9 footers. Awesome. And obviously they threw in some of those other ones that he was making birdies, but like still, if you're making 8-9 footers for par, like, you are grinding out those holes. You're probably not hitting it good. You're having to lay up to numbers to try and get it inside at 20 feet. Try and make it for par.
And usually those players will identify the days they don't have it, and they'll be like, okay, my targets are going to be pretty smart today.
Yeah.
Right? Like, talk to right pin. You know, we typically go 5 left of it. We're going to go 8 left of
it. Yeah. We're going to go for the middle of the green, try to 2 putt and get out of here.
Exactly. Because it feels like crap today.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We, Andy and I have recently kind of rebranded the podcast a little bit, and we're going to expand into more of it being like a golf brand, if you will. So we want to get in like the apparel game a little bit and like merch, maybe eventually do some cool events or whatever. Like, we do this as a hobby, but you know, kind of our new tagline or new motto that we're trying to bring into effect is care less.
Yeah.
Like, stop caring so much, and goes back to the process versus outcome stuff.
Yeah.
And so as we're starting to bring people on, I want to ask them, like, you know, you talk about when you go out, you know, trying to get everything you can out of that round, right? Like, make it as good as possible. But what are the things that maybe, whether it's amateurs or good players or whoever, should like stop caring about? Like, for me, it is, I need to stop caring about like what I have put in the work, like the practice, and how that is actually going to translate on the course, and just trust that it's going to.
Yeah.
And not care about like, dude, you hit 100 balls before the round. How are you not striping it today? Like, who cares? Like, me, you know,
I can tell
like,
you who doesn't care. The golf ball doesn't care what work you put in before that swing.
That's
right?
A big piece of it. Like,
exactly.
And a lot of things, and like, your playing partners probably don't really care unless you're playing for a lot of money, but like, no one really cares. So how do you like, a lot of pros talk about this in professional golf, is the process versus outcome. You got to stop caring about the stuff you can't control. You know, what are the things that we need to stop caring about? And all of a sudden your game will probably go to the next level.
Exactly. So the first thing is, nobody cares what you shoot. And especially like, no one cares as much as you do. And so I had this eye-opening moment. It was like my first or second year I'd turned pro, and I was playing terrible, and I was going to get in this. It's like the Minnesota PGA has like this, you know, Michael Block went crazy last year.
Yep.
It's the section event. It's the big section event. I can't even think of it right now. It's like the section championship. And if you get like top five or whatever, you go to Arizona and you play with Michael Block and all those guys, and then top 20 make the PGA championship. Right. And I told my dad, like, I don't think I'm going to play. I'm not playing well. And so my dad's always been like my coach since he's kind of been like, obviously he's my dad, but he's like my caddy too. So I always tell him, like,
kind of like JT's dad.
Yeah, exactly. I don't feel like playing. It doesn't feel, he's like, I'll go play. It'll be fun. I'm playing terrible. I shot even, but I was like five over through the first nine, playing terrible. And I went crazy on the back and almost had a chance to get in, but just fell short. And I was so excited to call my dad after the round and say, "Dad, man, I didn't have it, but look at how I fought and grinded and got back to shooting 73 or 72 or whatever." And my dad, first of all, he didn't answer the phone. And then I called my mom and she didn't answer either. And then my wife was working, so she didn't answer. And I get in the car to drive home and I'm like, wow, nobody cares what I shot, yeah, right?
Like, no one cares.
No one cares. And to me, it was like this big thing. But I think the realization is, man, you're the one that cares the most what you shoot. And so,
yeah,
like you said, like, who cares, or stop caring, whatever the slogan was going to be.
If you
care less. If you can drink that in and like just understand, really, no one cares but you, I think there's some solace you can take in that.
Yeah, it's almost like you put too much pressure on yourself to impress others when at the end of the day, like, they don't care.
They don't care.
No one really cares, because it's not like we're getting paid to play this game. Like, we're doing it for us to prove something to us. And
exactly.
Yeah, I guess I had never really thought about that. I mean, I do know that people don't care. I think my fiance maybe cares like once or twice. She'll always ask what I shot.
I think she cares more if you come home happy or sad.
Yeah. I was going to say there'll be days where last year I was like, "Babe, I shot a 68 today." And she was like, "Wow, nice job." And I was like,
"That's it?"
And I was like,
"What do you mean?"
"Yeah, that's my lowest ever." And she goes, "Oh, nice job." And right. Then like, you know, a couple days later, she's like, "What do you shoot today?" I was like, 75. She's like, "Nice job."
Yeah, the scene.
Like, she doesn't care. She doesn't actually care.
On that drive,
she cares because I care. Exactly. That's the only reason that she cares. And that's why I love her.
My dad calls me back an hour later on my drive home. I'm like, Dad, I couldn't wait to tell you. Like, I was four over through eight or whatever, and I shot 72. It was windy. The pins were hard, but I made four birdies. He's like, "Sorry, son, I got to go. Your mom's calling me."
Yeah. Good plan, whatever.
Yeah, he didn't even say that. He was just like, "Oh, sorry, I got to go." So it's just like, man, I thought everybody was like watching live scoring. Like, the whole world was like, "Oh, Justin, is he going to make another birdie?" No one cares.
Well, so on the topic of live scoring, to transition a little bit off of playing and all that stuff, I was sitting on the 16th tee at DPC Stadium down in Arizona. It was probably 3 weeks after they played the Waste, and they still had a bunch of the stands up. And I was like, it's going to be really interesting to see in a few years where the game of golf evolves to, with this whole like social aspect and the kids coming up with YouTube. And I mean, there's this whole PGA Live stuff going on that really needs to get figured out. Andy's just had an episode where he basically yelled at the microphone for 40 minutes about how much he hates Jay Monahan. But aside from that, I was like, man, I wouldn't be surprised if within a few years, you know, we're playing courses like this, and you can quite literally, whether it's on your card or your phone, put in like your live. Like, have you used the Grint before? The Grint kind of does a version of this where, right, like, you can follow along your buddy's playing. Like, what if you were at the Waste Management, you know, they kept the stands up all year round, and like every group when they went out, like, your score and the player is up there. It's like, now on the tee, you know, it's seven over. You know, had that up there. I wouldn't be surprised if within a few years, like, we start to see some of that stuff.
That'd be cool.
Come out. Like, do you guys ever, you know, since you're in the game, talk about, you know, the things that, whether it's your club like Spring Hill or just others in the game are thinking about, that, you know, to kind of change and keep up with the times, if you will? Because we really feel like we're at this point in golf where we could either go this way or this way. Right. And like, something's going to happen. And I'm just kind of curious if you guys talk about that stuff, whether it's at the club level or just the game in general.
Talk about it with everybody. I mean, you look at the last 20 years as a whole, and like, where technology is going is unbelievable, like the rate that it's changing. And so, like, if you were going to say, "Hey, I'm going to redo this studio and I'm going to get force plates and cameras and whatever," by the time that entire process is done, there's probably something better being released again. And so, it's like, how do you stay on top of that? And then at the same time, you've got artificial intelligence. And so what I've been thinking, what keeps me up late at night, is like, if I wanted to help every golfer in the world, if my goal was to change the world handicap or better it by 0.001%, what if I were to come up with an app?
I've got an idea for you if you want to talk about it.
Oh, let's do it. But an app that artificially can kind of, like, you see all the Sportsbox AI and all the things that can quantify your turn, tilt, sways, all this stuff, the 3D. What if I had an app that did that, and it could read face to path, and with artificial intelligence, it would say, "Okay, your path is 7 degrees outside in. we're going to try this drill where you feel the hand path work more in, bigger hip turn, whatever it is. This drill was successful for 91% of golfers. And then X, yes, it worked, or check mark, no, it didn't work, whatever. And then it goes to the next drill. Oh, you try this one instead. Close your shoulders at setup. This drill worked for 78% of golfers. And
yeah,
just like constantly the with AI, like it's getting better every time someone uses it. So that keeps me up at night a little bit. I'm like, how could I create something like that?
Yeah. So I using that, and then almost, I don't want to say take a step further. It's basically doing similar things, but imagine it's gamified. So, right. You know, here's your drill, do this for an hour, come back in 7 days, film your swing again, five swings, you know, you get a score based on how well you've executed that drill.
That's awesome.
The other portion that I would really like to see, and this is where I think that, one, I would love to do this and kind of feel this out, but two, that I think people could get a better understanding is you could do your swing, take your measurements and all that stuff.
Yep.
There's got to be a professional golfer out there that made that those similar components of the swing that you have
made it
work. Yep. Right. Like I know at Golf Tech, you know, so, man, your swing's kind of like this. Like, let's take a look at how.
Let's use Jonas Blixt.
Yeah. Let's use Jonas Blixt and see how he's like, he has a lot of similarities to your swing. This is how he makes it work.
Yep.
Being able to do that and then see like your swing up next to somebody else's and be like, if you could just get your, you know, shaft angle here and yep. a little more lean here, you're going to be very close to this golfer and they're one of the best in the world.
Exactly.
Right. Like, that's where I would love to see, like, what is. Who is my
Who's
matchup
model,
on tour, right? Like, I have very long arms.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I had to redo all my clubs and lofts and lies, like, I'm, like, two up on all my irons, but I'm a half inch long in them. Kind of interesting for having long arms, but, like, it's what makes it work.
Yeah.
And so I think there's that component, too, that, like, you know, these manufacturers and just golf in general is going to have to catch up to this new wave of how people are practicing, learning, making tweaks to their clubs and to their game and how fast they're doing it. And I am their, like, I'm their model, man. Like, I've gone through all these different clubs over the years. Like, I think I finally found my bag, but it took me probably 3 years to really dialed in and go through all the things that I went through. And it was a lot of sunken cost. If you could have told me you can do that in your first or second try, I'd be like, take all my money.
Yeah, right.
I'm in, you know, exactly. Like, I would have saved a lot of money and a lot of time.
And it's interesting. You make the point, like, how can I find a golfer that's successful and has a movement pattern that's like similar to mine? And so I always look at the golf swing as like, there's elements that steepen the swing and it's like, you're balancing these all the time. Elements that steepen the swing and elements that shallow the swing. And so what elements does maybe, like we said, Jonas Blixt have that you're missing that makes you steeper than him, even though your arms are the same length and your hip mobility is similar and whatever, right? Your thoracic rotation is the same. But what elements, and like, it doesn't have to be, oh, I need to do everything like him, but what major five things does he do that either shallow or steep in the swing, right? Where that you could take those pieces and then apply it to your game and all of a sudden everything's functional again, right?
Yeah. And of course, there's always going to be the aspect of, well, he's also a professional and practices putting for 2 hours a day and you're never going to be able to do that, right? And same with chipping. But like, just in terms of the golf swing, what we're learning, like you should be able to find something out there and there's plenty of resources out there to like figure it out. And 100%. I wish I could have done that a lot earlier.
Agreed. And so I think it's interesting you mentioned that, like, even if you did have Jonas Blixt swing, or let's just say for some reason you had Scottie Scheffler swing, do you think you'd be the number one player in the world?
No. I don't know if I could make it work the way that he does.
Right. So I think there's an element that we don't talk about enough in golf. And it's like, there's mechanics and there's two pillars. I think there's mechanics and there's skill. And so those are two completely different things. Mechanics, like we turn on Golf Channel at 8 a.m. on a Tuesday and you see, and no disrespect to anyone, but like Asian Tour or Canada Tour, DP World Tour, and you see 30 perfect swings and you're like, how have I never heard of this guy?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's an element missing. Obviously, there's some mental game stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a skill element. And so what is skill? I think it's the ability to produce the outcome you want regardless of how it looks. And so you look at like a Bubba Watson, and is that the swing you would teach everyone? Probably not, but dude's won a lot of money. He's got a green jacket, right? So I think like, the ability to develop that skill, and like you talked about those gamifying challenges and stuff like that, as long as you could sort of scale it to the individual, I think that'd be great. But like, what I like to have a lot of my players do is develop some of those skills. And I think as we get into the future of golf instruction, yes, we're going to talk about mechanics like we always have, but I think we're going to talk a ton about skill development. How do I get really good at controlling whether I hit it 10 millimeters on the toe or 10 millimeters on the heel just by changing it when I want to? How do I take a club face that's 8 degrees open at setup and hook it? How do I set it 8 degrees, close it, set up, and slice it? Like, yeah, all these intricate little things.
That video of Tiger and his dad, where his dad at the top of Tiger's backswing, he tells him to hit a draw straight, low fade.
Yeah.
And it's like literally in the middle of his swing.
Yep. No time to process that.
Yeah.
And it just, it's and, awesome.
And he can do it. Like, that is obviously next level, but like, that's the type of skill work that I also didn't really start to understand until maybe a year and a half ago, when I was, you know, before I ever knew Luke, following him on his Instagram and seeing, you know, oh yeah, working on skill work with whoever. And I was like, what the fuck's that mean? Like, what are you talking about? And
then, yeah, no one understands it.
Yeah. You don't really understand. Yeah. And then like now on my simulator, you know, I'll play or I'll hit balls, but they have these like custom skills tests, and it's like they'll give you random wedge numbers, right? You got to like hit those numbers. And so like the difference between block practicing versus like skill practice is something that I'm hoping this year starts to take my game to that next level, because I get a, you know, 43-yard shot after I absolutely blast one, but it's way right. And I got to hit this kind of weird 43-yard shot. I'm like, oh yeah, I've hit this shot before.
100%. Right? And I think there's an element when you talk about like wedge numbers, right? We could go see the top 5 wedge gurus in the world, and they could all tell you, hey, we want smash factor to be 1.0. We want club speed and ball speed to be relatively close to one. So that if we have a 45-yard shot, we have to swing the club 45 mile an hour to get it to carry 45. But if we took your motion and then Scottie Scheffler's motion, or whoever's a good wedge, Scotty's a good wedge player, and we said
JT,
if we put you side by side and we gave you both the same technique, my money's still on JT to carry at 45, because I think he's more skilled than you. And that's not a diss at you, right? He's more skilled than me too.
I think he's if he's not technically, I still do believe he's the best wedge player in the world. Like,
he's so fun to watch.
He's so good with his wedges. It's
he's so fun to watch.
Insane watching him hit like an 80-yard wedge shot. It's like inside 10 feet every time.
Yeah, so I think there's this element of mechanics. We've got to have a function. Like I said, path, face, contact on the face, contact with the ground. Like, all those have to be functional. We should always be trying to sort of, what's the right word? Not revamp, but like, I'm dead in my thoughts.
It gets really awkward when no one says anything.
Well, right. It's really quiet in here when it's quiet.
Like, and you're in here.
And I hear nothing. Yeah. But we should always be trying to, like, I guess, improve our swing, but only if it improves those things, right?
Sure.
Base, path, content, whatever. Yeah. And then we should be developing our skill, because, like I said, I think, you know, if we had Justin Thomas and you try to hit it 45 yards, your technique might be very similar, but JT's going to carry it 45 more consistently.
Yeah, he practices it more. Yeah, I really want to, this year when I'm out there, you know, one of my goals, spend a lot more time inside of 100 yards and go into the short game area and just like, you know, hit balls to different pins and try and hit it high and low. And then like when you're putting, you know, not just hitting straight 10-foot putts all day and like going and figuring out the speed.
So that goes into variable and block, right?
Yeah.
You were talking about.
Yeah.
I think you were touching on this, but block practice, great for making changes, right?
Yeah.
Variable practice, great for improving performance.
Yeah. Yeah. I would tell people, like, you know, when I'm practicing with buddies, I'm like, let's play a putting game. You know, we each get 3 balls and we put them down. And, you know, one of our caddies at, it was either Whisper Rock or I think it was a Whisper Rock. He was like, me and my buddies play first to 21, put a ball down, call a hole, first one that it takes them 21 putts, you lose.
Oh, wow.
Right. So like if you 3 putt the first one, I put 2 putt, then we 2 putt the rest of the way out, like you're going to get to 21 faster than
me.
Right.
That's
so they just call it the 21
one.
Game.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Throw the ball down. You just pick a pin location and first one to 21.
You can pick any distance. You can pick a 5-footer.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah. That's cool.
And so it's just, it's a different way of like getting that skill practice in, making more fun, throw $5 down, whatever.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, like where can, I'm hoping I can have like 10 minutes with you before you leave in here, but.
Oh yeah. Let's see.
You do online stuff too, right?
Do online stuff. So at Spring Hill, I'm limited to member lessons. So that's what I do. But I do teach non-members online on the Skillist app. Do a ton of those. And then I will occasionally go to a public facility that I have an arrangement with, and I'll do a couple
Where do you do those? Like in Spring Hill, lets you do that. Like they're cool.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. Spring Hill is the best. It's not number two based on what I know. Golf Digest has it number two, but it's number one.
I see. I still haven't played it, and everybody, like even you know, everyone says like Spring Hill is amazing. I am going. I would bet my life savings that you know Prosser.
I love that guy.
So Prosser and I are tight. He's gonna tight? Yeah, we're gonna
He's
play.
A great guy.
I played with him down at Briggs Ranch this year, and I think I earned some street cred.
Is
with
he gonna
him.
Bring you out?
Yeah, he's gonna bring me
oh,
out.
Oh, we gotta yes. play. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd love to get you in that group. That'd be fun. Gosh. I've met Morneau. He's a great guy. Trying to play with him, awesome. But I know he gets busy with baseball.
Yeah.
I know there's a few other guys out there, but Prosser's kind of like my dude that I'll play with. And we've played a few times together on trips and stuff.
Yeah. So. And I have the best job in the world because I spend every day with the coolest people I feel like in the state.
Yeah. I can imagine.
It's so fun. You talked about like, why'd you get into loving it? And now I got into it because I loved it and I had a passion for it. And now I'm staying in it because again, I have a passion for it, but like, I never feel like I'm working. I always feel like I'm just hanging out.
That's
with
a great
awesome
way to live
people,
life, too.
Right?
Yeah, so, I'm telling you, our foursome will be Pross,
us two,
me, you, and Mr. Anderson, Steve Anderson.
Oh my gosh, how do you know him? Him and Michelle.
Yeah,
I love those guys.
That'll be our foursome. They're we'll so be great. Steve Pross, me, and you.
Steve is so nice, but he looks like the Terminator when you first meet him. Dude's strong.
He's very, and he's got that thick accent.
Yes, he does.
But he's one of the best men in the world.
He's
and
awesome.
I know his boys, Kyle and Tommy, are buddies of mine. So that's how I met Steve. They're on the lake. So we'll go over to their house every now and again. He's just so welcoming and awesome. And we were supposed to play out last year, but he ended up having to travel for work. And so that'll be our foursome. We'll set it up.
That's cool. But yeah, you can find me. I've got an Instagram page. It's Crafty Golf. Crafty Golf with a K. And then I'm doing online lessons all the time. I'm doing all kinds of lessons all the
time.
That's
awesome, man. I need to have you back here. When Andy will be here, you guys
Let's do
will
it.
Nerd out. And then
Let's
I can kind of be the voice of reason that try and like,
like tie it all
in layman's terms. Yeah.
Right.
That'd be great. And I appreciate you coming out, man.
Yeah, of course. It's my pleasure. I felt like I talked about me way too much.
That's what this is for. Is it like, it's fun to talk to people in the industry. Like we realize how small the golf world really is as we started to do this. I remember we were like, a few months into this thing and we had talked with Scott Fawcett from Decade Golf. We had talked with Johnny Wonder from Callaway. Mm-hmm. We never got to release it because the audio was horrible, but George Gankus.
No way.
You got to talk with George Gankus.
George on here? Let's
go. Yeah, dude. Like we've had some really cool guests. And so I know like eventually, you know, all this stuff will get out there and hopefully people will find value in it, but it's fun for us and we love it. We learned so much and having people like you here in studio is just sweet, man.
Super fun
it.
For me too. Whenever Andy's back, we'll go deep dive on mechanics 100%. And stuff. I feel like you were talking about your audience. I feel like your audience would love that.
Oh yeah.
So we'll go deep dive into that. Like Benoit does.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see you out of Spring Hill this summer. I'm sure.
Let's do it. I'm in.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Jordan.